It is Friday, October 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. Senate advances Brett Kavanaugh's Supreme Court nomination to a final vote. The head of the U.S. Central Command talks to VOA about the continuing war in Afghanistan.
Russia is trying to exert their influence in the area.
And country music singer Brad Paisley works to provide free groceries to the less fortunate. It's all ahead. On Friday, the U.S. Senate narrowly voted to limit debate on the nomination of President Donald Trump's embattled Supreme Court choice, Brett Kavanaugh. The vote advances the nomination to a final confirmation vote that could come as early as Saturday. The 51-49 vote was largely along party lines, with Joe Manchin the only Democrat to vote in favor of advancing the nomination and Republican Lisa Murkowski voting no. The procedural vote allows up to 30 hours of Senate debate before holding a final vote. Last week, Christine Blasey Ford told the Senate Judiciary Committee that Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her at a high school party in the early 1980s. Kavanaugh vehemently denied the charge. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky said the FBI was unable to locate any third parties who could attest to any of the allegations.
There is absolutely no corroborating evidence for these allegations. Same thing we heard a week ago. If they were, you bet we'd have heard about it, but there isn't.
But Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer said Kavanaugh evaded his questions about Roe versus Wade, the law which legalized abortion, and the limits of presidential power.
If Judge Kavanaugh becomes a decisive vote to restrict the rights and privileges of the American people while stretching the bounds of privilege for the current occupant of the White House. Judge Kavanaugh's nomination ultimately does not only encompass questions of ideology or credentials, but questions of character.
I'm joined by VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Well, Jim, the vote to advance Kavanaugh's nomination, does this indicate that it's likely that his nomination will succeed when the vote does come?
It would appear so, Sarah. It's possible that a senator could vote to proceed to a final vote and debate and then change his or her mind and indicate that, you know, they just at the end of the day want to decide otherwise. But generally, if you get the procedural vote to go your way, the final vote is probably going to go the same way.
Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski voted against advancing the nomination. Was this a surprise?
No, she's been on the fence and has said little. And often, if that's the case with a senator, it means they're giving some deep consideration and probably to opposing. There was pressure in her home state of Alaska to oppose Brett Kavanaugh, including from the governor there, who's an independent. But this put a handful of so-called moderates on the Republican side and a few on the Democratic side in a really tough position. And we've seen some wrenching decisions in the last few days. A Democratic senator from North Dakota, Heidi Heitkamp, went on a local TV interview to explain why she is opposing Kavanaugh. That's at great political risk to her. She's running for re-election in a state that Donald Trump won easily in 2016 and where they tend to get behind the president. So there's a lot of risks for senators, especially in an election year, and we are in a midterm election year.
Yeah, and there's a West Virginia Democrat, Joe Manchin. And then also, I was going to ask you about as well, Susan Collins of Maine. She voted to, I believe, to advance the vote, but she said she will announce later today the decision she will make.
She's going to have a final note to add to it all. She's been under tremendous pressure. She's had protests not only in near her Senate office in Washington, but back home in Maine, people have taken to the streets. So this has galvanized people around the country, and that is the next question. If Kavanaugh holds on and is confirmed, yes, it'll be a big political victory for President Trump and the Republicans. They'll have a solid conservative majority on the high court for the foreseeable future. But what does it do to the dynamic in the midterms? We already have Democrats extremely energized, in some cases angry. I think this vote to push Kavanaugh through is only going to feed that. So the Republicans may be winning a battle now, but I'm not sure what happens on November 6th when we have the midterm elections.
What role could possibly Vice President Mike Pence play with this final vote?
Yeah, it's always an interesting aspect to our democracy that the vice president also serves as the president of the United States Senate and therefore can cast a tie-breaking vote. That's the only time the vice president could vote. So the Republicans have a little bit of margin here, but it's not much. And let's be honest, this is a very divisive confirmation process. It was a divisive nominee, and the Senate reflects that divisions, and we see it in protests all across the country.
Well, what about these? There were various charges of sexual misconduct brought against Kavanaugh, not just by Dr. Ford, but by other women. Were they sufficiently refuted?
The Democrats say they were not sufficiently investigated. I do think if we go back a week from today, the decision to have the FBI do some sort of additional background check, in the end, it looks like it may save Brett Kavanaugh. At the time, it was seen as very risky. Republicans opposed it, with one exception on Jeff Flake, a few others. But now it looks like it allows the Republicans to say the FBI was not able to garner additional information that backed up some of the charges. Now, of course, the Democrats continue to complain that the investigation was not fulsome enough, and perhaps even at the White House tried to sort of control it. So all of this means that the political battle over Kavanaugh, it's going to go on no matter which way the Senate votes. Ultimately, there's a lot of bad blood now in the Senate. It was already there anyway. But also historically, Supreme Court nominations were not always so divisive and angry. And now you have to wonder, given this precedent, is this something we're going to look forward to every time someone is nominated to serve on the high court?
Well, of course, he would be the swing vote, too.
He would. He's replacing a person who was a swing vote, Anthony Kennedy. And by all accounts, Kavanaugh is a much more reliable conservative. That would give conservatives a reliable 5-4 majority on the court.
And what impact could this have on Kavanaugh, on his future tenure on the court, if he's voted in?
Well, he's, you know, got an op-ed article in the Wall Street Journal where he talks about how he was emotional, somewhat apologetic tone, and trying to reassure people that he will act as a non-biased judge once he's on the court. But I'm afraid the cloud is likely to follow him to the court, no matter what. How can he sort of remove that cloud? It's not easy to see right now. And how will the other justices react to him if he is confirmed? But this whole thing has really divided the country. And for the first time, there's a little bit of a shadow on the court, which used to rely on its reputation as not being political.
All right. Thanks very much, Jim. That's national correspondent Jim Malone. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. The Somali government blocks an ex-militant from seeking political office. The head of Interpol is reported missing after a trip to China. A Congolese doctor and a Yazidi human rights activist win the 2018 Nobel Peace Prize. And Pakistan arrests an opposition leader on charges of graft. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Over the years, astronomers have found several thousand exoplanets, or planets that exist outside of our solar system. Studying data gathered by the Kepler Space Telescope, the scientists came across a gas giant exoplanet called Kepler-1625b that exhibited irregularities suggesting an orbiting moon or exomoon. The astronomers followed up their Kepler studies with Hubble Space Telescope observations. These observations are providing initial evidence of a moon that is perhaps as big as Neptune orbiting Kepler-1625b, a planet several times more massive than Jupiter, and is located 8,000 light years away in the constellation Cygnus. The astronomers stress that so far, the existence of this exomoon is hypothetical, and more study is needed to actually prove its existence. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Brazilian voters prepare to go to the polls on Sunday. We'll have a preview. Army General Joseph Votel, the head of U.S. Central Command, told VOA in exclusive talks by phone Thursday that Russia is posturing to be a player in the solution to the Afghan conflict. Votel is the commander who oversees U.S. forces in the Middle East. At the end of 2014, U.S. forces stopped taking a direct role in ground combat against the Taliban and shifted to what they call an advise and assist role. Since then, Afghan forces have taken heavy losses, even though they outnumber the Taliban and are supported by U.S. forces. Votel began his remarks by discussing the Taliban strategy versus the U.S. strategy in Afghanistan with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb.
I think that strategy against our strategy is not a good one. The conditions-based approach that we have that is focused on reconciliation is different than clearly different than what the Taliban has, which I think is kind of waiting out here. You know, going after remote locations and trying to find isolated positions and inflict a lot of casualties right there. Yeah, that has an impact on the Afghan forces. It's caused a lot of casualties, but that's not an effective strategy, a tenable strategy for actually reaching some type of end state in our estimation. As a guy who has looked at this for a long period of time, Afghanistan, you know, and seen a lot of different approaches kind of coming and going, I do have the sense, and I'm just sharing you some additional insights here. Something is different right now. There is something different from the ceasefire and the impact that had on the psyche of Afghanistan, of the citizens of Afghanistan, the psyche of, I think, of the Taliban.
One thing nobody asked about is how Russia and Iran are affecting the strategy. I know we've been seeing news reports about how Russia was trying to arrange a conference in Moscow to invite parties to talk about the Afghan conflict, including members of the Taliban. How are they affecting this?
You know, Russia is trying to exert their influence in the area, and they are seeing that we have become very serious about this. And not that we were not serious about it before, but the president has been very serious about it. I think we have a very serious strategy here in terms of what we're trying to do. So I think they are trying to posture themselves to be a player in the solution. And that's what I think that we're seeing right now. And so, you know, they are trying to introduce into this alternative channels to move towards reconciliation. And you've seen this discussion in Moscow here, and Afghans have, you know, kind of pushed back on that a little bit, and then they actually did it, and really nothing more came out of this. But I think what they're trying to do is they are pursuing a strategy which is to compete with us by trying to exert their influence wherever they can, whether it's in Afghanistan or Syria or anywhere else. The other thing that they are doing is they continue to use disinformation to create the narrative that they want. They continue to perpetuate this idea, not just in Afghanistan, but in Iraq and Syria as well, that the United States is responsible for supporting and propagating ISIS. I mean, as ridiculous as that is, They continue to say it. They continue to talk about it all the time. I heard it in the last 7 days, just on, you know, with respect to what is happening in Syria. So they're this continuing effort of disinformation to paint a narrative out there is something they do as well. But what they're trying to do is create this false narrative and this false reality that supports their overall objective of being an influential major power in this part of the country and being part of the solution. So in particular, that's what I think Russia is doing.
And Iran affecting the strategy at all? Or what are they trying to do?
Well, I think in my view, Iran is a little bit different. I think they don't have any love for us here. But I do think Iran shares concerns with along their eastern border, the western part of Afghanistan, and is concerned about, you know, the threat of this emanating onto them. But, you know, Iran is a hedger, so, you know, they try to have a relationship with Afghanistan, but I think they also have relationships with the Taliban. If you went out to Herat and you met with any of the people out there, and perhaps you have, you and I did just about a month and a half ago, that's all I heard about was Iran, 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 and the things that they were doing to prop up the Taliban out there. You know, I don't know that we have a lot of good, hard corroborating evidence for that, but certainly the people think that that's happening out there. So I think they hedged their bets on this, and they're like the Russians are focused on increasing their influence. I think the Iranians are more concerned about their own stability in that part of their country.
U.S. Army General Joseph Votel speaking with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Brazilians head to the polls Sunday in the country's first round presidential election with unlikely former military officer and longtime lawmaker Jair Bolsonaro of the Social Liberal Party leading pre-election polls. The controversial 63-year-old Bolsonaro, the object of an assassination attempt last month, is viewed widely as a controversial, even polarizing figure with an outspoken law and order campaign. His chief rival is leftist Workers' Party candidate Fernando Haddad. Mark Jones is a political science professor at Rice University in Texas and chairs its Latin American studies. He tells International Edition's Victor Beatty this is the most unusual election in Brazil since it returned to democracy in the 1980s.
The traditional parties have by and large collapsed, with the partial exception of the Workers' Party, and its ideal candidate, former President Lula da Silva, is in jail because of corruption charges, and therefore Fernando Haddad, former Sao Paulo mayor, is running his place. On the other side, Jair Bolsonaro, he's been a congressman for quite some time, and he's seen as, at least traditionally, was seen as a very fringe actor. But in a country that's hungering for someone who's a non-traditional politician, who's not tied to elites, that is essentially an anti-system candidate, he's providing the vehicle for them to cast their vote. And right now he's ahead in the polls and seems certain to finish first on Sunday, although below the 50% plus one he would need to avoid a runoff. Right now we're looking at him and Fernando Haddad, the former mayor of Sao Paulo, who's the Workers' Party candidate, entering a runoff and then competing 3 weeks later to determine who will be the next president of Brazil for 4 years.
The Workers' Party, known as the PT, of course, has ruled the country for 13 of the last 15 years. Is it being blamed for the country's recession, rising violence, and corruption?
The PT, as well as all the other political elites, are receiving the blame for the corruption, for the violence, and for the mismanagement of the country. And that's helped fuel Bolsonaro's rise, combined with the fact that he's one of the most strict anti-crime candidates and pro-public security candidates, making very controversial statements about executing criminals. But in a country where most people have personal experience with crime, at least a family member has experienced within the past year, this is a very serious issue. Brazil is a very violent and very dangerous country. And Bolsonaro knows that people want law and order, and even though he's extreme on the issue, his position, his virulent anti-crime position, is popular with many voters who live in fear many nights.
Mr. Bolsonaro himself survived an assassination attempt. Has that given him some sort of a sympathy vote?
Oh, a little bit, and I think it just reinforced some of the points he was making about crime and violence in Brazil, with himself being a victim of it. It also caused some of the parties that were adopting very harshly negative campaign strategies against Mr. Bolsonaro to dial them back a little bit, lest they be seen as being unsympathetic to someone who was in jail with his life at risk from a politically motivated attack.
Mark Jones says a Bolsonaro victory would represent a shift away from traditional party candidates in Brazil, Latin America's largest economy, toward more populist candidates, much like Mexico, which chose leftist president-elect Andrés Manuel López Obrador. A second round in Brazil, if necessary, would be held on October 28th. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice
of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Country music and philanthropy go hand in hand. Country artists frequently seek out ways to use their platform to help others. Recently, Brad Paisley and his wife, Kimberly Williams Paisley, announced their partnership with Belmont University to open a groundbreaking new free grocery store in Nashville. Nikki Strong of VOA One is here to share the details. So, Nikki, tell us about this free grocery store.
It's interesting. It's called The Store. And it's in partnership with a series of organizations, including a food bank in Belmont University, to give fresh and non-perishable groceries to people and families in need for a period of a year. Their goal is to serve 3,000 families within their first year of opening. Nonprofits and government agencies that they're working with will refer the customers to the store. And Brad Paisley says it's not just a food pantry. It's a grocery store with dignity for people who've fallen on hard times. It's a temporary band-aid on the road to self-sufficiency. The food pantry is just one aspect of it. They plan to include a toy aisle over the holidays so families can select gifts for their children for Christmas. They will also coordinate with other nonprofits and governmental agencies to provide other services, including on-the-job training. And through Belmont in particular, they will be able to provide participants with access to health care and legal aid clinics. And Belmont University, by the way, is Brad Paisley's alma mater.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Well, what inspired them to create the store?
This is interesting. It was a Thanksgiving holiday they had in California, he and his wife, Kimberly. And Kimberly, in particular, thought that their sons were acting really spoiled.
Oh.
So as a lesson, she organized a family outing to volunteer at the Unity Shop in Santa Barbara, California, which provides groceries to people in need. And they had hoped to teach their kids a lesson about serving and giving back, but they came away surprised with what the organization actually taught them. And what was key for Brad Paisley was that the people had dignity. And he said, it's not a scene from Oliver Twist, which I think also speaks to a lot of people's perceptions of people who are hungry or who may be going through difficult times. He says these people are able to sit there and feel very normal in the eyes of their kids. And that really moved him. He felt it was a very dignified atmosphere, not judgmental. And he thought to himself, you know, why isn't this everywhere? And he said so many people are making great choices. They just need some extra help. And so they were like, we have to bring this to Nashville. And that's how the store began.
When will the store open?
It's supposed to open next year. Belmont University secured the land on which it's being built. It's going to be located next to Belmont's Ministry Center. They are currently fundraising for it. It's going to require $500,000 before starting, and the total construction is slated to cost $1.2 million. So the Paisleys have donated the initial gift, and people can find out more information about the store at thestore.org.
You can hear music from Brad Paisley and other country artists on Country Hits with Nikki Strong on VOA One. You can also reach Nikki on Facebook and Twitter at VOA One The Hits. Thanks a lot, Nikki.
You're welcome.
Yeah, when I get where I'm going, there'll be only happy tears. I will shed the sins and struggles I have carried all these years. And I'll leave my heart wide open. I will love and have no fear. Yeah, when I get where I'm going.
The music of Brad Paisley brings us an end to our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.